Coming up on Golf Today, the USGA and R&A continue to look at distance in golf, assessing potential changes, and looking to preserve golf's long-term sustainability. We have guests from the governing bodies and analysis as well. And we hear from Justin Thomas after his shot-making splendor at the Players. He's back at it in Tampa at the Valspar. A JT appreciation of shot shaping, painting pictures on a Wednesday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
I'm going to get your rest in right now. Very, very important to get your rest in. Long week at the Players, right back at it, a tough golf course at the Valspar Championship. Kicked things off on Thursday. Got a very, very good field with some of the best in the world involved. Excited for Valspar. We got a lot to talk about today on Golf Today. It's Shane. It's Damon. D, how you doing? How you doing on this Wednesday?
I'm doing really well. I tell you, this is a golf tournament, the Valspar. It's kind of sneaky great. I feel like, you know, hear a lot about Bay Hill. Of course, obviously, TPC Sawgrass and in the Honda Classic, it's a good nod. But there's a subset of players who think that this golf course, the Copperhead at Innisbrook, is the best golf course pound for pound on, you know, the spring swing. You want to call it the Florida swing. This is going to be a fantastic week of shot making. It's kind of different than your typical Florida course. Got a lot of undulation, some up and down, some trees. It's going to be a fantastic test this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you think about the battle back in the day with Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed. You think about Tiger Woods kind of making a run at this when we're awaiting that next Tiger victory on the PGA Tour. That was so much fun to watch. I agree. I think that's a very, very good point, as this is a very underrated week. And every week kind of following a major championship for the Players, it always feels a little relaxed for the Players. Now, I know there's a championship up for grabs, but those Thursday and Friday rounds are a lot of fun to watch. You see a lot more smiles than you do as those Players are battling 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Also, some news on this Wednesday. We'll have a little bit later on Live Golf and what's the next step for one of these rival leagues of the PGA Tour. Right now we're talking about Players making the transition from TPC Sawgrass to Innisbrook. And you mentioned, Shane, you
got a field.
Great field, but you got to pace yourself. These players can be tired. You know, some of them having to play all the way through Monday. I mean, Keegan Bradley, what a great run that he had. The 2011 PGA champ is in this field. Justin Thomas, someone we'll be talking about quite a bit, and what a shot-making display he put on last week.
We'll look at JT's last five starts. Some very, very good in there. Century Tournament of Champions, top five. You see sixth at Riviera. And somehow finished in a tie for 33rd at the Players. But we are really focused in and above that second round and how impressive that was. And JT jumping in front of the media today.
I feel great about my game. I feel like it's very, very close to where I'd like it. I mean, I feel like I'm close to getting on a good run here. I'm just trying to stay patient, kind of let it happen. I mean, I played some really, really good golf last week. I mean, I was obviously on the wrong end of the draw, and I feel like I played really well to battle through that and really fought hard on Sunday and Monday there to kind of hang around, and really just got a little unfortunate there with the rain coming out when I was on 17 to throw away a long week of fighting. So the result was not even, I felt like, close to how I played last week, but I'm showing a lot of great signs of improvement in the areas I've been working on, and you know, I feel like some wins are coming, so I just need to stay patient, keep letting it happen.
Comfortable grouping at the Valspar for Justin Thomas, Kisner, Carlos Ortiz go out at 1:03 p.m. Eastern that first round on Thursday. JT right back at it after an up and down week at the Players Championship. And it's very interesting when you dive into Justin Thomas, the player. And D, when you look at what he's been able to do at Sawgrass, a golf course that it doesn't seem like Players can really figure out. And you feel like this is kind of Justin Thomas's thing.
Yeah, you know, in a week of bad weather and rain and wind, there was a moment last week, especially during that round of 69, where I said, you know what, this is the player who will be the first to go back to back at the Players Championship. That's how much faith I had in him. That's how impressed I was with his shot-making ability. And I thought that he was right there. He looked to be a player on a day and a week of uncontrollables who was in total control of his golf ball, who could move it left to right, right to left, hit it high, hit it low, hit the pitching wedge 180, or hit it 95. And it was so fun to watch. Obviously, it didn't happen. He did not go back-to-back. But I still think that maybe this is a golf course that through the years, we will see JT continue to paint beautiful pictures because that's how his mind works and that's how his skill set works as well.
Painting pictures as he's sitting next to the Valspar trophy. I like where your head's at there. I agree with you. I feel like this is kind of JT's thing. I mean, when you look at the great players of this generation, they've all got that thing. Rory went on that great run at the major championships, winning three straight events, including two majors. You think about Brooks Koepka, back-to-back U.S. Opens, back-to-back PGA Championships. I mean, that is his thing. Jordan Spieth is kind of this generation's Augusta whisperer, if you will. It doesn't really matter how he's playing. He gets to Augusta National, and he finds his game there. And for JT, he's kind of been searching for that thing. Of course, he's won a major championship, and he's won a Players, but now kind of getting in the mix of multiple Players championships and really understanding this golf course and throwing those pitches. I'm so impressed by his ability to hit it really, really hard when he needs to, but also finding different ways to get the ball close to the hole. And this is something that's beautiful when you dive into who Justin Thomas is. I mean, you go back to that PGA Championship, you know, when he won that major championship. We'll look through JT's career. We'll go back to the U.S. Open first and foremost. You remember the 63 at Erin Hills?
Man.
This 3-wood from 298 yards. You know, I was standing in the back of this green, D. I mean, wedges weren't getting this close. And for him to be able to hit this 3-wood that high and stop it that quickly, setting up an eagle for the best round in U.S. Open history. And then I'll take you to the PGA Championship. He won. This is a 7-iron from, what, 220 yards. And again, at this PGA, it was hit it high, and it's going to land soft. And he's able to do those types of things, but he can also throw off-speed pitches as well.
I asked him about that tee shot at 17. He said it's the best golf shot that he's ever hit, period. 7-iron from 220 to 14 feet, makes birdie, wins the PGA by two.
And then now, same guy, right? Same guy that hits a 7-iron straight up in the air and it goes 220, is able to hit this rope hook 3-wood when the hole asks for it. You remember the Players last year on the 16th? What a cool golf shot that was. Thank goodness we have Shot Tracer for it. And then the next swing, you hit the big old hook, can you hit the cut?
And I love this, and this was really getting a lot of action, as you can imagine, on Twitter, the social media reaction. And we hear say, oh, you know, this is a golf course, we have to be able to move it both ways. And here's JT on back-to-back shots showing exactly how you do it. Right to left, then left to right, and then the tee shot at 18.
I'm going to say, I still contend a little lower and a little left of what he was looking at, but still just the idea of hitting that golf shot, going up there, stepping up, and pulling it off the way he was able to pull it off was just so impressive. You know, I was saying yesterday, I didn't love Cam Smith hitting driver on the 18th, but I love JT pulling that club because he's capable of moving the ball that way. When asked, I feel like this guy has the most game in terms of conditions and how he can play and really just playing the golf course for what it is that day. What are the conditions asking of? We talked about the Open Championship yesterday, and he doesn't have a top 10. He's finished in a tie for 11th at the one Open 2 years ago where the conditions were brutal. And I feel like Justin Thomas is the type of player, much like Phil Mickelson, that's going to get more and more comfortable at these Open Championships as his career goes along. And I would be shocked if he doesn't win a Claret Jug at some point, considering those golf shots that we saw.
I want to throw something at you. I have a theory. I think that one reason why JT and Tiger are so close, and not just because they're both only children, not just because they both, you know, have major championships on their mantle, I think it's how they see the game.
Yes.
And the respect that Tiger has for the shot-making ability of JT, because it's kind of old school. We showed JT off of 18T. I wanted to throw a highlight on of Tiger off of the 18T at TPC Sawgrass. Notice how similar this shot shape is going to be from the shot we just saw JT hit, of course, last year on the way to winning the Players. Here's the greatest of all time doing it. Taking a little off speed, right to left, you know, less than driver. And that's how JT sees the game as well. The windows that Tiger would hit the ball through is very similar to how JT plays the game in this modern era.
Around the green, similar as well. I totally agree with you here, D. I mean, listen, the resume's not there. And when you start to compare people to Tiger Woods, it can be really, really tough to find similarities in who they are. But in terms of the game they possess, I do agree with you. I think JT is as close to Tiger as we have seen. Rory can do incredible things on the golf course. As you've said, Koepka is incredibly good at mentally keeping himself in tournaments and major championships. But when you're asking golf shots, hitting the high pitch shot, the low shot, the wedge from 90 yards, as you mentioned, these types of things, when you watch Justin Thomas on the golf course and you kind of squint your eyes, it feels as close as we've been to Tiger.
JT, one of the players we'll be watching this week in Tampa. Now, folks, we have some tragic news to report today out of Texas. Officials have confirmed that a bus carrying members of the University of the Southwest men's and women's golf teams was involved in a fatal car crash last night on their way back home to New Mexico from a tournament. Of the 9 passengers, 7 were killed in the head-on collision, including Tyler James, the coach of both teams. 2 students are in critical condition and undergoing treatment in Lubbock, Texas. our deepest sympathies to the families and the university.
Back on Golf Today, the USGA and the RNA today released updated areas of interest in research topics on hitting distance in golf. Governing bodies are continuing their work to assess potential future changes that address the long-term cycle of consistent increases in hitting distances. The update follows a consultation with the industry and focuses on the notice and comment of areas of interest from the February 1st, 2021 release.
USGA and RNA released two updated areas of interest. Number one, potential changes to golf ball testing methods. Increased club head speed used to determine conformance from 120 to 125 miles per hour. Potential changes would apply to balls used at all levels of the game. And modern local rules, club performance, reduce allowable spring-like effect and moment of inertia in drivers to enhance reward of central impact. Potential changes would apply to competitors in competitions involving the highest level of golf.
Look at the timeline. Go back to February 4th, 2020. USGA and the RNA published their distance insights report. You remember that, of course. Initial areas of interest report released February of 2021. Modern local rules restricting club length of 46 inches announced in October of 2021. Updated areas of interest report released March of 2022. And, of course, that due date for feedback and research is September 2nd, 2022.
And joining us now, Thomas Pagel, Chief Governance Officer with the USGA, and Steve Otto, Executive Director, Chief Technology Officer of the RNA. And we have Jaime Diaz joining us as well. Thomas, I'll start with you. The timing of this update following the consultation with so many in the industry, what is the message the governing bodies want to convey to those who play this game?
Yeah, thanks, Damon, and thanks for having us. Look, the message is we're moving forward, right? As you mentioned, we issued the Distance Insights report back in 2020. Last year, we issued what we call an Area of Interest Notice to manufacturers, where we put out a number of topics that we're interested in researching or understanding how they could perhaps help us address this cycle of increased hitting distances. And then we find ourselves here today with what we're calling a more narrowly focused area of interest, where we did research, we had consultation with the industry last year. Now we're narrowing in on these two specific topics. It's a part of the process. It's a process that's still going to take us some time. No decisions have been made to date, but you know, when it comes to the testing of golf balls and the overall distance standard, we are looking to perhaps update those test conditions, as well as interested in exploring that model local rule around drivers. So another step in the process here, but we are narrowing in and becoming more focused with what we're looking at.
Steve, I want to ask you about the driver specifically. In the release, it says that a broad and balanced set of skills should determine success in golf. Does that mean that the driver in the modern era has become too consequential at the expense of other clubs, and that's trending too much toward the world of long drive?
I think it's just that the modern drivers can be used without too much worry if you're going to miss the center of the club. And this is about enhancing the premium for central impact rather than just swinging at it and being sure you're going to get a response. So there's two elements to it. There's the spring-like effect, which is the efficiency, and the second element, the moment of inertia. And I think that's critical to look at this balance of skill, not only the distance these guys are hitting it, but to make sure that there's that balance between distance and other factors.
Steve, how much of this is player and tournament-based, and how much of this is venue and history-based?
That's an excellent question. It's a real balance between all of those things. There's no doubt that the athlete is a big part here. They are really incredible players. And the tagline of these guys are good. They really have moved the game forward, but this is just looking at that question of whether the equipment has facilitated perhaps moving forward on distance where perhaps they shouldn't. And this is a hybrid approach that we're putting forward together today to look at both club and ball. So it's not just about distance, not just about that absolute how far do they hit it and how long a course is, but how those courses play. So course setup, of course, plays into this, but it's about balance.
Thomas and Steve, in the testing of whether a golf ball conforms to the rules, you are investigating the possible increase in the launch speed of the current test from 120 miles an hour to 125 miles an hour. Because the ball being tested cannot exceed 320 yards of carry and roll, the change to be discussed would cause a rollback of between 12 to 15 yards for the longest drivers. In your opinion, would that be considered a moderate or a drastic reduction in the distance at the professional level?
I think considering...
Well, I'm not sure that I would label
together,
it...
Sorry, please come on.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, Jaime, I'm not sure I would label it moderate or drastic, but what I would say is if you look at that test itself, the overall distance standard specifically, it's a test that was created in 1976, and the original intent of that test was to replicate the hitting conditions of the longest hitting players at the time. And originally, the clubhead speed was set at 109 miles an hour. Now, as the game has evolved, as athleticism has evolved, so too has that rule or that testing standard. It was updated in 1986 and then most recently in 2004. And in 2004, we updated the swing speed or clubhead speed from 109 miles an hour to 120 miles an hour. So as we sit here today, we're just stepping back and we're reflecting on, if you look at the PGA Tour average drive distance, it's actually getting closer to that 120. And so we're no longer replicating the longest hitting golfers. And so what we're interested in doing, what we're putting out with this area of interest is, let's look at this test again. Let's see, are we able to replicate it? And what would happen if we tested balls with a clubhead speed at 125 miles an hour or higher, again, as we look to the future of the game?
If I could just add to what Thomas has said there, I think we'd look at your question on golf ball distance and what the overall distance standard would mean in terms of a change, but also couple that to the club part. This is two elements at the elite fast end of the game. It's the element associated with the club and it's the element associated with the ball. So rather than thinking of this as just a change to the ball distance, it's the combination of the two that we'd be considering.
Thomas, you have club companies around the world and some made in the USA, robust R&D departments looking to innovate. Any concerns that a potential rollback could hurt their businesses, hurt their bottom line?
Look, when it comes to innovation, one thing that we think is so great about the game is it's an industry of innovation. The game has always innovated around equipment, and it will continue to be the case, even if we do look to make these changes through the overall distance standard or introduce a model local rule. And with that, you know, there are a couple of nuggets that we buried, or they're not buried, but they're in the area of interest that talk about innovation, specifically freed up innovation for the recreational game. When we came out last year with the distance report, or 2 years ago, excuse me, we said as we looked at possible solutions, it was very important to us that we didn't have a substantial reduction across the game, meaning we didn't want to have a substantial reduction at the recreational level, specifically those golfers with lower clubhead speeds. In today's area of interest, we're talking about from the golf ball perspective, there's another standard called the initial velocity standard, which really doesn't govern the game for tour grade golf balls or the golf balls that are going the furthest. What it does is it actually hinders some of those softer golf balls, those high compression golf balls that are of better value or use to recreational golfers with lower clubhead speed. So we're contemplating eliminating the initial velocity standard altogether to really free up innovation and allow for some innovation at the recreational game. And likewise, on the club side, with the potential for a model local rule, we've said if that model local rule is adopted, we might actually look at eliminating the MOI standard altogether for drivers for the recreational game. So again, we're looking at two specific topics. Innovation is going to continue in this game, and we think that that's a good thing.
Thomas, how would you assess the feedback you've received from the golf community on the use of the model local rule, as you have in the case of limiting driver's length for the elite events to 46 inches, as a tool to reduce distance at the highest levels of the game?
Yeah, I mean, Jaime, as you can imagine, I mean, any part of this topic, you're going to get mixed feedback. And it's the same with model local rules. We get feedback from players, some that like the idea of a model local rule, others that don't. Certain manufacturers are intrigued and like the idea of a model local rule as a way to manage distance. Others are not. And so it really is a mixed bag. But you know what? For the last year, again, we had such a wide range of topics that were included in that initial area of interest. The next 5.5 months, as we engage the stakeholders, as we engage manufacturers, the tours, players, other interested parties, we'll really be able to have more focused discussions around what a model local rule would look like, how it would impact the game, and really take people's views on that.
Well, Thomas, Steve, we appreciate the time. Very, very interesting. Excited to see what comes from this. We always appreciate what you guys do for the game. We'll chat soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
Well, we've got some breaking news today. LIV Golf Invitational Series set to launch in June. Thought this thing was gone. It is back. We have details on the schedule, the purses, the format. Our own Rex Hoggard will join us as well for more insight. got some breaking news on a Wednesday. Latest development with the Saudi-backed golf league as LIV Golf announced an invitational series set to launch this June. LIV Golf Investments is providing more than $400 million in seed money to launch this series, D.
And this series comprises 8 events, as you mentioned, from June to October. London.
Mm-hmm.
We have Portland as well.
Pumpkin Ridge. This place is fantastic.
Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey. The International, Boston. Rich Harvest Farms in Chicago. Stonehill in Bangkok, Thailand. You have Royal Greens Golf Club in Saudi Arabia. And a team championship event to be determined.
So we got the format as well. You see the way it's laid out in terms of the tournaments. Got the series seven regular season events plus the team championship, maximum of 48 players across 12 four-man teams, 54 holes with no cut, and a shotgun start.
Shotgun start and a lot of money total prize purse for all 8 events, $255 million.
How much was that?
$255. And a $25 million purse for each regular season event, payouts to every player in the field, an additional $80 million available for the top individuals and teams across an entire season. For more, we turn to a senior writer at Golf Channel, Rex Hoggard, one of our insiders. Rex, there's been a drip, drip, drip of rumor and innuendo. Now we have 8 events. What is the reaction to this news?
Well, the interesting thing, Damon, you guys pointed out what kind of we had been talking about for really the last few years. We knew it was going to be a limited schedule. We knew there was going to be a team component, 12 four-man teams. We knew it was going to include a lot of money. The interesting thing that I found out is I talked to one manager who has been involved with these talks, and he said that this proposal is different from what they had been hearing really over the last few months. There had been a thought that any player that went to this league wouldn't be allowed to keep their sponsors as they were. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. They would have had to wear uniforms. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So this seems like it's a direct reaction to what not only what happened in Los Angeles when you had a lot of the high-profile players, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, announced that they were going to stay with the PGA Tour, but certainly Commissioner Jay Monahan's comments last week. Now, the interesting thing here, and this is sort of echoing what Eamon Lynch, our colleague, wrote last week, that this seems to an attempt to expedite the process to get to what everyone knows or everyone feels like is going to end up being a legal challenge. The commissioner has not used the word suspended or even expelled from the PGA Tour, but it's been implied. When he has talked about any players who may go to this league, he said they cannot have it both ways. They can't play both leagues. So you would imagine a player who would make this jump, there would be some sort of legal challenge, and that seems to be where they're going with this. Now, you guys just pointed out the schedule. There's two things that was also brought to my attention by this same manager. One, there's only 3 events that currently fall, let's call it the proper version of the FedEx Cup schedule. That's before the Tour Championship. The other events come after the Tour Championship. And that's important because if you look at the way the tour season is structured, players are only allowed right now to get 3 competing event releases, which is what they would need if they were going to compete on this other tour in theory. So if you broke it up, you would make it easier for those players to be able to go and participate in those if the tour does indeed give out those competing event releases. Now, there is a part with, there is another stipulation in the regulations that no player would be allowed to be given a competing event release for an event in North America. So this does seem to be coming to a head, Damon.
Rex, you know, this is one of those situations like the way I listen to music in my car. Occasionally it's very, very loud, and sometimes I just turn it off. It seemed like it's been very quiet in terms of what's been going on over the last few weeks. What's it been like on tour amongst the players, considering this has been a conversation for players over the last couple of years?
Well, I think the idea when we left Los Angeles, and again, you had some high-profile players committing to the PGA Tour, that there was a lot of thought that this was over. Rory McIlroy said as much when I asked him in Los Angeles. I think most players knew, though, behind the scenes, this was still going on. There was a lot of money involved, and there was motivation on the part of Greg Norman and LIV Golf to get this done. So it's not going away anytime soon. What you're going to end up having, though, right now, what's going on behind the scenes, is you'll need at least one tour player to stand up and make the commitment to play in these events, these 6, 7, 8 events on what this invitational league is going to be for that legal challenge to move forward. And everyone is kind of waiting for that shoe to drop.
So we have this LIV, LIV Golf. There's also this news breaking from the Fire Pit Collective on this PGL and a letter they obtained to the PGA Tour. What can you tell us about that proposed league?
I think what you're dealing with here in the PGL were the originals, the originators of this. Go back 2.5 years when this first became public. It was the PGL and Mr. Gardner in London, who's a financier, who was behind this. And he still has ideas and he still has financial backing. And whether or not if that can happen remains to be seen. I don't think he has the deep pockets, so to speak, that LIV Golf has because of the Saudi backing that LIV Golf and Norman has. But in this particular case, there are plenty of players that I've spoken to on the PGA Tour that really like what the PGL is proposing and like the idea that maybe the PGL and the PGA Tour could come up with some sort of arrangement, that they have a partnership. That's not happening. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen in the future, but there's certainly an interest.
Rex, we always appreciate the insight and the time. I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon on much more on this subject. And, of course, worth noting, Dee, no players have been announced yet in terms of the details with this. We haven't had somebody step forward to Rex's point, but it's very, very interesting. This is like the Undertaker gif. We're just back into it.
It's funny, the fact that no player has kind of walked the plank, put themselves right out there yet. We've got the schedule. We have no idea who's going to be there. We have 8 events around the world, and no player yet has put their hand up and said, I'm going to be the first one. I'm going to be the Kurt Flood. I'm going to be the player, the first guy to make this leap. I can't wait to find out who it's going to be. I imagine they'll have some players.
I've never put together a tour before, but yeah. I think you have to have players. It's something I'm at least under that understanding.
I've got dates right
you've
here.
You've got dates and tournaments.
Cities, Boston, fantastic city. Chicago. But we have
Portland,
no idea who's going to be.
We don't know who's going to play. And, I mean, June 9th is going to come quick.
There's no accident why we don't have names yet, because it doesn't seem like this is something they want to be very, very forthcoming about or necessarily sticking their chest out about.
Very, very interesting stuff, and I'm sure we'll have much more on this in the coming days. Well, how about a young man from Ole Miss?
Oh, okay.
I think it's PGA Tour debut, collegiate player, great player in the field this week at the Valspar. Big chat next. All right, let's take a look at the PGA Tour Velocity Global.
Wait a second.
Ranking.
Sam Bennett.
Oh, my goodness. What's Sam? What happened to our guy?
Sam. We had a picture forever.
Been a staple atop Velocity Global Rankings this whole year. Pearson Cootie back from the injury, and he takes the top spot.
Oh, those Cootie boys are tough. Take a look at 6 through 15.
I'm shook, D.
I mean,
I don't know what to do.
We just got to just power through.
Okay. I know I can do it.
All right, who we got here? We got some great name. Cole Hammer. I'm focused on 11. Jackson Suber, Ole Miss. We've spoken to him before. Number 11 college star. Given a sponsor exemption into the Valspar. This week, these young players, they're just coming from everywhere, Shane.
Yeah, he can go really, really low. When you look at his low rounds each year at Ole Miss, a lot of 63s, 64s, and 65s. And it is very nice to see PGA Tour debut in his hometown event.
Man.
His senior, a look at his profile, D.
Yeah, fantastic. You see, he won the White Sands Bahama Invitational in October. I actually saw some video. They were like dancing around on the beach. White sand beach, aqua colored.
Wait. They're White Sands Beach
white
at the
sands.
White Sands,
I mean,
Bahama Invitational.
It?
Weird.
It's not false advertising.
It
is absolutely true. And you see that team best 69.2 scoring average this season, 11 of 12 rounds at par or better, kind of like a Jin Young Ko energy going along with Jackson.
Well, Jackson joins us now. Jackson, we appreciate you taking some time a day away from the Valspar getting going. How pumped are you to tee it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited. I mean, my hometown event, couldn't have asked for more.
Jackson, you have Will Zalatoris' caddy on the bag this week. How did that come about? How did you guys pair up together?
We just have a mutual friend in common, and golf's a small world, and kind of starting to realize that more and more, how small it is out here and connected.
Now, Jackson, I'm going to take a shot. When you were like in high school, maybe even middle school, Lee McCoy, remember Lee, 2016, local Tampa product like yourself? He went to the University of Georgia, also a sponsors exemption, made a great run back in 2016. What do you remember about that? You were a kid, and Lee McCoy took it deep.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he notched a top 10, and I mean, as you see more and more over the years, I mean, kids are getting top 10s in PGA Tour events that are in college, and it really it's really shown how far the game's come and how much it's changing, and I mean, that gives motivation, and hope to maybe give some kids some motivation like that this week.
Jackson, have you had your moment yet this week where you're walking along the range or you're going out for a practice run and you're like, oh my goodness, that's Justin Thomas?
A little bit at first when I first arrived on site, but you kind of start to realize it's the same people I'm playing against in college, are just a little older.
Jackson, we spoke to you in the fall. I recall we talked about chicken on a stick. We talked about the 18 miles per hour you're supposed to drive on campus at Ole Miss. You said one thing you wanted to work on was your mental game. I'm curious what you found in the interim with that part of your game.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on it and just trying to kind of stay in the same mindset and kind of figure out what my ideal performance state is in my mind and kind of have that and kind of keep me calm this week and not try to be someone I'm not and just keep playing my same golf game out here and see where that puts me.
Jackson, I know you're focused on this week, but I'm interested in your summer goals. Are you going to turn professional right away, planning on competing in some of the big amateur events throughout the summer? What's the post-school schedule for you?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I still have the option of returning for COVID, but right now I'm just focused on playing well this season, and I'll probably end up making a decision soon on where my path's going to be this spring after that, but I have two good options, so college golf or pro golf, they're both looking forward to both of them.
So you're a Tampa native, you grew up in the area. Give us a sense of tickets you've had to hand out, how much your phone is buzzing, people bugging you for that inside the ropes pass to watch you play some golf this week.
I should have some friends out here and some family, which will be nice and kind of bring a sense of comfort playing on the big tour. A lot of new things at me this week, and anything that brings me a little comfort is definitely good.
Now, Jackson, I know you were talking about professional golf and the excitement about turning pro. Did you watch the Players last week? Did you get a chance to catch that great Saturday with the tough conditions? And what were your thoughts of those players out there battling 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds on one of the toughest golf courses on the PGA Tour?
I didn't get to watch too much of it. I had a lot of flight troubles getting here because of the weather, so I'm sure it was carnage there, but I've seen a couple videos on Twitter and such, and it looked like it was a real challenging test.
Jackson, what's the routine this week? Are you at home? Are you at a Holiday Inn Express? Are you getting, like, home-cooked meals? Give us a sense of how the week will unfold for you.
I'm staying at a friend's house, actually, a little bit closer, and it's kind of the other way, so I don't have to drive through any traffic, 5 o'clock traffic, to get back home. And it's kind of weird staying at home for a tournament, so I didn't really want to do that as well. Trying to keep everything as normal as possible for me.
Well, Jackson, I know it's an exciting week for you. Get some rest. Yeah, the weather, as we all know with the Players, was tough.
Yes.
In the southeast part of the country. So best of luck. Have fun. Walk slow. Soak it in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sorry. Yes, sir. Hope to see you all in the Grove soon.
Oh, atta baby.
That's the comment. Action Jackson.
Y'all need to get some chicken on a stick.
I need to go back. It's been a minute, Jackson. We appreciate the time.
Action Jackson.
Okay, we're in.
Yeah, okay. Good stuff.
All right. This week, check out the brand new game. You can't miss PGA Tour Pick'em Live, powered by PointsBet. Make your picks, change your mind, climb the leaderboard, play for free today, and submit your picks at pick'emlive.pgatour.com. Who's your pick this week, Pete?
Victor Hovland.
Going Hovland.
Victor Hovland.
That's who he's going with. He's going Victor Hovland. We got some bets in a little bit we're going to throw at you.
Live look at the Copperhead Course in Innisbrook, site of the Valspar Championship. Last stop in Florida, Snake Pit takes center stage. Tough finishes. So many are in the state of Florida. Golf Today rolls on a Wednesday.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Second hour of Golf Today. That was a busy hour of GPT.
Yeah,
that was a busy 60 minutes.
It's been a busy year, busy couple of years in the game of golf. Some rules, you know, issues coming to the fore.
We had tours all over the place.
We had Jackson Suber, nice kid from Ole Miss. We've had him twice as we talk about the global velocity rankings, all these kids looking to kind of find some footing in the pro game, seniors looking ahead to a bright future in this game. But, man, I think we're still also recovering from the Players' Championship and that the wild week plus that was.
Would you like to talk about some golf?
Let's do it.
Talk about, like, professional golf.
Inside the rope.
Playing golf. Okay. Let's check in on one Dustin Johnson. You mentioned the Players. This was final hole of the day on Monday. Started on 10, finished on the par 5, ninth. Very quiet. 9 under par 63 with a hole out for eagle on his final hole at the Players. All of a sudden just ran up the leaderboard.
Pros don't like starting on that 10th hole in the final round, but if you're going to do it, go out and shoot 63.
It helps.
Go out and hole out for eagle. DJ has done that before, holding on to his final hole. Look at that final round, tying the course record. Ninth player to shoot 63 at TPC Sawgrass. Moved up 50 places on the leaderboard, 13-shot improvement over that third round, 76.
Very impressive stuff from Dustin Johnson. And Dustin Johnson chatting about the week that was and the week that is with the media.
You know, started rolling in a few putts finally, and then, yeah, you know, made a long one on two for birdie, which was, you know, I hit it right in front of the green in two and just hit a poor pitch shot and, you know, made about a, I don't know, 30, 35 footer there. And then just kind of kept it going. You know, just hit some good shots, hit a nice shot on three, and then obviously, you know, hold out there on nine, which was, you know, a nice way to end the day, especially after a long week. You know, frustrating week for me, I feel like, just because, you know, obviously the draw I was in. And, you know, I felt like I played good. I just really, you know, really gave a lot of shots away that were unnecessary. So it was frustrating week, but it was obviously nice to end on a good note with a nice round on Monday.
Yeah, that dude is the same whether he's shooting 63 or 83. Look at that first 299 starts for a future World Golf Hall of Fame member. 24 wins, 113 top tens. Consistency, that name is DJ. 245 made cuts, and of course, the 14 straight seasons with at least one win.
82% of the time, he's making the cut on the PGA Tour. It's a credit to his ball striking and really his ability to overpower golf courses throughout his career. He has been so impressive there.
Bold prediction. I want a bold prediction.
Time now for a little bit of bold predictions around Dustin Johnson. I mean, this is a 37-year-old that has been playing professional golf since 2007. Mm. Won his first PGA Tour title in 2008. I wonder, at 37 years old, the motivation for Dustin Johnson. He's done just about everything you can do in professional golf. He's won two of the biggest events in the world with the Masters and the U.S. Open. He's been in contention at just about everything you can be in contention at. He's worked so hard at parts of his game to improve. And that's where I wonder about Dustin Johnson, the motivation to continue to push, because you have to. I mean, we look at the world golf rankings right now, it is young players that are hungry and still looking to make their careers. They're still looking to add to their Wikipedia pages, right? Dustin Johnson's is very, very impressive. I just wonder about where Dustin Johnson is going, because 37 never was old in prior PGA Tour iterations. 37 is a little old right now on the PGA Tour, even if we're seeing players win in the late 40s and early 50s like we saw Phil last year at the PGA.
Speaking of 37, he has made over $73 million inside the ropes. That doesn't include his FedEx Cup title from a couple of years ago. So I'm going to go on record. As much as I like DJ, I think that consecutive streak of wins in a season will come to an end.
Okay.
This season, I think it comes to an end. Part and parcel with what you're saying about the motivation. He's got a growing family. I think winning the Masters in November 2020 for a
huge
kid from South Carolina, you want to talk about an ability to exhale. We saw tears from DJ, something rarely, if ever, seen from one of the best of this era. He has been a great number one player, but I wonder in this era of Jon Rahm and Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas and Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay and these young, hungry players, that with DJ, with having already accomplished so much, I just wonder, you know, doesn't have to work as hard anymore. I'm sure on some level the clock is ticking, but is it really ticking for him? Does he really have that fire to keep putting in the time after an already incredibly productive career.
I mean, you just can't take 5% off right now. I mean, that's the thing. Even as talented as Dustin Johnson is, and with the skills he possesses, he still had to work at it to get to that point where he was consistently contending and winning major championship. This is a guy that had to work on the wedge game and had to work on 150 yards and in to get to a point where he felt like he could win those events, like you mentioned, the Masters. And you think about his win last year, early in the season, he won on the Asian Tour. He picks up victories, and he's going to continue to do that. But that consistency we've seen from Dustin Johnson, that is my fear, is that consistency in terms of the big events, the major championships, the Players, the FedEx Cup. You've got to be so motivated. You've got to push yourself so hard to continue to play to that level. Because, again, you mentioned some of those names. They're coming out hungry. These college kids are coming out hungry, expecting to win and win big events. And Dustin's got to put in all that work and all that time and continue to try to push himself and improve. The career is Hall of Fame worthy, obviously. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be in the Golf World Hall of Fame. He's won major championships, and he's won FedEx Cup events. I just look at Dustin Johnson as a player that if he stopped playing golf tomorrow, we would be talking about the best, if not the most consistent player of this generation.
The one note of caution is that he is a freak. He's the he's the Javon Curse of golf.
Nice.
And that physically, I think his body will last. This is someone who could dunk barefoot. I actually saw him at Key when I asked him if he could still dunk barefoot.
He said
he haven't tried recently. That was more of something.
Dustin,
in his
don't
20s.
Dunk barefoot. No, let's not do that anymore.
Now. But the point is that physically, he's one of those players who could disappear for a few months,
right,
or not have the motivation for a few months, and it doesn't seem like it would take that much for him to get back on the good foot and start playing high level of golf. I think he is someone who physically could perform in his 40s and continue to contend and back his way into a WGC or back his way into a third major championship. I think he's that physically unique and gifted.
37 years old. He's 16th this season in driving distance on the PGA Tour. That part of the game is not going away. You mentioned the athleticism from Dustin Johnson. I still look at an Open Championship as a place I think Dustin Johnson will have a chance to contend in. I feel like the game is there. The mentality is there. We've seen him come so close, pushing Darren Clark, if you remember, for so long in that Open Championship. I feel like when you're looking at potential major championships, the Open is a place that Dustin could still contend in. I mean, he could win anywhere. You know that. I mean, catch his fire for 4 days, we could see Dustin and run away with the U.S. Open, run away with the Masters. But it's just so hard to keep putting in 100% year in and year out when you've been doing it, like I said, since 2007. It's a long time ago.
So DJ, final round 63, found his way into the final two rounds at the Players' Championship. But a surprising miscut, I would say, from Cal Bear, Colin Morikawa. This was his, you know, had the hoodie on round two. I mean, this was the guy playing in the toughest.
Listen, I know Colin Morikawa's young. He's going to learn a lot of things in life. You don't wear the hoodie when it's windy. I've run into this issue before.
It
hits you, it slaps you in the face.
Mistake, you
think? It blows all over the place. You never go hoodie and win. And if you are going to wear the hoodie and it's windy, tuck that bad boy.
Okay.
Tuck it into the back of your polo.
The hair still looked good, though, people were saying. You know,
took
the hair
hat
still
off.
Good.
2.5 hours of wearing a hat. He takes his hat off. He's got perfect hair.
Colin Morikawa meeting the media earlier.
Going back to last week at 17, like when you go back to play there next year, will you have some scar tissue from that, or will you be spooked at all?
No, I came here on Monday, and JJ and I mean, I don't think we're going to get the wind or anything. We're going to get what we had last week, but we already hit that shot to what I should have hit. So I literally put a 7-iron down, one of the first shots we hit on the range, and I was like, okay, what did I need to do? So will I be spooked? I don't know. I mean, I had great bogeys. I mean, I joked around. I mean, I probably should have laid up and I would have made three.
Do you know what you have to do this week to reach world number one?
No, but I assume if I win, I'll get there. You know, before you add anything else, I think the biggest thing for me is just I need to focus on this week. And I say that every time, but, you know, there have been times where it's crept in where, you know, you think about world number one, you think about this, what I need to do. And for me, it goes back to when I won the DP World, you know, the race to Dubai last year, right? There's a lot of scenarios that could have happened, but I just focused on winning. And I really need to focus on that this week because I do want to win. Like, it feels like it's been a while.
Last one for me. How big of an accomplishment would that be for you to get to number one?
Yeah, it'd be huge. I mean, I think anyone would love to get there, and everyone would, you know, see the satisfaction and work and everything you've put in. But it doesn't stop there. So, you know, whether I get there next week or whether I get there whenever or whether I don't get there, you know, the work's not going to stop because I feel like I can still get better. I can still improve on this. I can still do this. You know, I want to be the best in the world, but that's going to require a lot of consistency, a lot of other areas of my game to be a little more consistent. I think I've shown it, you know, in certain events where I've been able to put it together, but I want to keep doing that, right? And it's just working on those little things. So it would be huge. It'd be a definitely part of my career that I'd remember, but I want to stay there as well.
I'm just curious what the mental reset has been like for you this week and being able to get here on Monday. Like, is that a better transition for you given everything that happened at the players, just conditions and everything that you all had to face out there?
I mean, I wish I played on Monday. I'm never not wishing I made the cut. But you know what? I think the guys out here are so good that even if you gave us one day, and a lot of the guys have played this course, even if you gave us one day, they'd still know how to figure out the course. They'd know what's in front of them. The tour and the caddies and everyone else around us, our team, we do such a good job of prepping for Thursday that, you know, it's not like I have an advantage because I've played one extra day over everyone else or guys might be a little more tired. I think when you show up on a Thursday, the guys that really want to win and that are ready, like, they'll be ready. So it's nice because I didn't have to go off my normal schedule of, you know, my normal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday practice. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, who's ready by Thursday.
Another chance to become world number one for Colin Morikawa this week. You remember the Hero World Challenge had that 5-shot lead out of the final round, shot 76. If he'd have won there, he'd have been world number one late last year. Look at the points bet odds this week at the Valspar. Justin Thomas and Victor Hovland, the favorite. Colin Morikawa right behind him. DJ there, Xander, Louis, Sam Burns, Hatton, Fitzpatrick, and Shane Lowry round out the favorites.
All right, Shane Bacon, time now for our best bets.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Of the week. You have any thoughts? Where do you want to go here? You got a fantastic field. You got the snake pit to navigate. Who do you like?
What's I have a winning bet. Is that what you'd like to hear about?
Yeah, for sure.
I've got a winner.
Okay, what you got?
Keegan Bradley, just top 20, just finishing the top 20 for Keegan Bradley. It is plus money, plus 230 if Keegan Bradley finishes in the top 20. Now, this is a guy that finished in a tie for 11th at Bay Hill, fifth alone at the Players, finished second here last year. I mean, this is auto. This is just, you know, just go home and cash the ticket.
It's a ball strikers golf course. He had a great
You like that or not?
I do like that weekend. Plus money at that. I'm going a different route. I'm going minus money. Jason Day, former world number one, major champ, players champ. I have him as low Aussie this week, and it's minus money, minus 189. You gotta pull out there. You got to beat the likes of Cameron Percy and Mark Hensby, some you know, world-known players, but I still think that Jason Day is Jason Day. Doesn't have great success on the golf course. He's made 4 cuts out of 7, you know, missed the cut 3 times, but I think we're starting to see Jason Day play the type of golf that we used to see him play.
Seen glimpses. I mean, I talked a lot about this last year with Jordan Spieth. It wasn't necessarily the weeks where he played 4 days of good golf. I just needed to see those glimpses of good golf. And I'm with you on that. I mean, we've kind of felt like we were getting that from Ricky Fowler this year, and then he would struggle the next round or fall off the leaderboard. But I'm with you on the Jason Day thing. I think we are inching closer and closer to Jason Day starting to play a bit of consistent golf. And it feels like Jason Day wants to play that consistent golf, get back to the guy that he was on the golf course. He was just so impressive.
Love to see it. Fan favorite. We'll see what Jason Day has in store this week in Tampa. Now, folks, we have some tragic news to share with you out of Texas today. Officials have confirmed that a bus carrying members of the University of the Southwest men's and women's golf teams was involved in a fatal car crash last night on their way back home to New Mexico from a golf tournament. Of the 9 passengers, 7 were killed in the head-on collision, including Tyler James, the coach of both teams. 2 students are in critical condition and undergoing treatment in Lubbock, Texas. Our deepest sympathies to the families and the university.
We're back. Breaking news today in the latest development with the Saudi-backed Golf League as LIV Golf announced an invitational series set to launch this June. LIV Golf Investments providing more than $400 million in seed money to launch the series.
You mentioned it. The series has 8 events around the world. London, England, Portland, Oregon, Bedminster, New Jersey, Boston, Mass., Chicago, Illinois, Bangkok, Thailand, and Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And that team championship event, October 28th through the 30th, with a location yet to be determined.
We're on the formats. As we've seen more announcements roll out, 7 regular season events plus that team championship, max 48 players across 12 four-man teams, 54 holes with no cut, and a shotgun start.
And Jaime Diaz joins us once again as we look at his total prize purse. We're seeing big dollars, Jaime, being thrown around. Yeah. 8 events, $255 million, the $25 million purse for each regular season event, an additional $80 million available for the top individuals and teams. And I wonder, when you have these numbers thrown around, you know, how much teeth does this actually have? How much of a threat is this league to the PGA Tour?
Well, I guess it is potentially, but, you know, right now you have big purses, big markets, new format, you know, 54 holes, wonderful situation for players, no players. Mm. And there's a reason for that, you know, because there's a lot to lose. And I think Jay Monahan expressed it at the Players Championship very forcefully, you know, we are the best. We don't have to even care about other people present us because we have everything these guys want. And it's been reestablished. And they've raised purses, too. So right now, I think momentum is with the PGA Tour to kind of, you know, envelop everybody inside the tent. And it seems to be that way. However, you know, money will be out there. The Saudis can play the long game. They want a sports wash. And you don't have to have a lot of stars to do that. You just have to have a league. Even if it is a big markets that seem outsized for the type of field you might have, it still will get attention. It would still make legitimize or try to legitimize what they're trying to do with their image. So it's not over, but I do really feel like the stars in particular, they do play for money, but they play for history, they play for legacy, they play for respect, they play for reputation, they play for their future. The PGA Tour future is tremendous. You have a PGA Tour champions. You know, you have endorsements that last beyond your playing career. You have media careers. You have all kinds of things that I think would go away. I think it's the conventional wisdom would probably go away for anybody who joined the Saudi League. So I think tremendous amount to lose, and that's why there's no players. And right now it's too hot to handle.
Jaime, we just came off a Players Championship with all-time purse. I mean, it's $20 million in money up for grabs. If you split that equally amongst all the players in the field that week, it would have been about $140,000 per player. Considering it's 48 players in these events and the purse is so high, it'd be $500,000 per player if they got a full field. I mean, players are going to look at these numbers because they're so staggering. And I know that the PGA Tour has done a lot in terms of incentivizing these players with money. But when you look at this, nearly three times the amount of money you could win at a Players Championship in terms of an average finish, someone is going to eventually jump.
Sure. I think it's the people who for whom short money is most attractive, which is someone at the end of their career, perhaps, or someone who doesn't maybe love playing that much and kind of wants to cash out and get as much as they can and doesn't care about the residual stuff of a PGA Tour afterlife, so to speak. And I think that's still a great minority. But, yes, it's going to be very tempting. And I do think, though, that it just is a little too good to be true. You know, it's like fool's gold a little right now at this moment. If it's real money that's going to sustain, you know, okay, if your conscience can handle working for Saudi Arabia, I'm sure there'll be a lot of players that would consider it seriously and maybe do it. And the thing is, you know, the critical mass, if 5 or 6 guys do it, it becomes easier for 25 to do it. You need that first 2 or 3, and that's a huge step, though. And we've seen what's happened to who's put their neck out. It's been, it's been a difficult situation for Phil. It's been a difficult situation for everybody who's been mentioned as a possible loyalist, and they've all backtracked.
Yeah, we heard the commissioner last week say it's about legacy, not about leverage. Do you think that a player who does jump and decides to go would have his legacy threatened by this World Golf Hall of Fame status, endorsements going forward? Would this be a scarlet letter, do you think? As you know, if they have the John Rahms and Rorys and Tiger been so vocal in support of the PGA Tour that anybody that goes is almost an instant pariah?
Well, it could be officially a scarlet letter because it could be a ban. But then everything that comes with that, of course, you know, is reputational. And so, you know, I think it's something that it matters. I think as you get older, these players, you know, how was I remembered? I think it matters a lot. So, you know, yes, I think it's priority, if not one, priority two. You know, don't mess up your reputation and your good name.
Yeah. Damon, are you surprised to kind of hear some of these golf courses mentioned? I mean, some of these golf courses that are sought after places for golf fans and golf people alike. I mean, is this surprising to finally see a schedule and a format?
Yeah, some of the names I'm surprised. Some of the names I'm not surprised. I've been fascinated that there have not been more players that are willing to kind of step up. You know, this is kind of, I'm used to people in sports being more confrontational. Greg Norman has been confrontational and unafraid to send a vituperative letter to the PGA Tour commissioner, and we're hearing things about litigation. But, you know, there are no Kurt Floods here. I feel like there's no trailblazers here really kind of putting themselves out. I mean, Phil tried and then he almost immediately walked it back and apologized, and now he's disappeared. I just wonder who has the gumption to put himself out there, to turn his back on a PGA Tour that the Colin Morikawas and everybody were watching the FedEx Cup purse grow and the Comcast Tour Business Edge.
And PIP, and things like
the
that.
PIP, the PGA Tour life is so good. And the history of the league is so strong. I'm just surprised that there would be players to consider it. I guess, listen, money talks.
Right.
You know, money is undefeated throughout history. But I think the silence of players, the fact that it's been more rumor than actual having players come up and raise their hand and say, I'm ready to do this, it's been interesting to me.
Yeah, to Jaime's point, someone's going to come forward.
We think.
And the thing being is that they'll be criticized and we'll be talking about them for weeks, and eventually that story will go away. And then it'll be more normalized. And it's going to be more normal for these players. But it is going to take someone. And I'm so interested who that someone will be, because if you've got this schedule with these events, you talk to these golf courses and this much travel and this much scheduling and this much money, you've obviously got soft commitments from someone. I don't know who that is, but someone's called you and said, if you can put this on paper, I'll sign it, yes or no. And I'll be just interested to see which players, and to Jaime's point, what age bracket that player looks like. Because to me, it's young or old, Jaime. It's a really young player, you know, not wanting to go through the process of establishing himself on the PGA Tour, considering how tough it is to do so. And it's an older player that's having a hard time competing and looking to kind of get a last payoff before they're done playing professional golf.
I think one important lever will be where the majors sit in this. If you can play this Renegade League and still play the majors, that becomes more accessible.
Yeah.
But I think the majors will have a voice in this, and that may be determinative.
Yeah, in this era where I think the PGA Tour has done a pretty good job of building relationships with the USGA and the PGA and the RNA and, of course, Augusta National, this is a story we'll continue to follow. Jaime, thanks for your time on this Wednesday. It's a Past Champ Chat Wednesday, by the way, on Golf Today. Visit with a World Golf Hall of Fame member, two-time winner of the Valspar, Retief Goosen, the Goose, joins us after the break.
Time now for a Past Champ Chat. Retief joins us now. Retief, we appreciate the time. We've seen players have success on this golf course. You, KJ, Paul Casey, winning two times. What part of the game needs to be in its best when you play this golf course?
You know, that's definitely one of my favorite golf courses. It's one of those courses that every part of your game needs to be on top, especially driving. You got to shape it both ways on every hole. It's really one of the great layouts we play on the PGA Tour, personally. And, you know, it's one of those courses that you think, you know, you're going to shoot low. But it's just amazing how tough it plays every year.
Retief, you've won a lot of events more than once, not just the U.S. Open or the Valspar, Volkswagen Masters, China, South African Open, you've won twice. Why do certain places speak to you?
You know, a lot of it has to do with a golf course. I like a golf course that's playing fairly tough. I don't know, I've always struggled to shoot 20, 25 under par on a golf course and to try and win. I like the ones that less than 10 under par is sort of a winning score. It just feels like there's more grind, there's more guys that sort of give up halfway, and I feel I have a better chance. You know, some golf courses, if your putting is off, you're not going to get anywhere. Doesn't matter how well you hit the ball. But these golf courses where you have to grind on every shot and every putt counts, I like those kind of courses, and that's probably why I won on so many of the tougher golf courses.
Well, speaking of grind, I tell you what, that Players' Championship was a grind last week. You know, we're coming off a week where Cameron Smith was unconscious putting at the Players, 8-1 putts in his last nine holes. You had a Sunday like that at Shinnecock at the U.S. Open in 2004. You made everything. What is that like to be in a zone with the flat stick?
You know, it's a great feeling, obviously. The hole looks like a bucket. You see your lines well, and you're in such a great rhythm, making good stroke after good stroke. And obviously your confidence is high, but you also get in that sort of calm mode. Cameron looked very calm. He looked like he was really just going about. Then he hit a couple of bad drives and really have to grind it away in those last four holes to pick up that wonderful trophy.
Retief, when you go back to 2003 in your mind, thinking about the Valspar victory, what was a moment from the week that kind of comes to mind that you remember of those 4 days?
You know, I just love the way the course is set up. You know, I'm a natural draw of the ball, but there's so many holes that you also got to cut it off the tee. The greens is nice, hard and fast, and it has four of the greatest par threes we pretty much play on tour. You know, every par three, if you can get away there with pars on all of them, it's really good. I just always loved that tough test, and, you know, we were playing against some great players there too, and you always want to beat the best.
How much do you guys on PGA Tour Champions these days kind of relive the glory days, as you know Bruce Springsteen would sing? I mean, how much do you guys relive the U.S. Open battles and your wins in Tampa when you're at the 19th hole together?
Yeah, that comes up quite a bit, actually. You know, we're all sort of pointing fingers at each other. I was sitting for dinner with Ernie the other day, and he said, you know, you took 2 years opens away from, two South African opens away from me. And I said, yeah, you took two South African opens away from me too. So, you know, there's always been that battle. You know, I finished second to him twice and he finished second to me twice. So, yeah, we're always pointing fingers and saying, you know, it should have been me and not you. But, you know, at the end of the game, the guy that lifts the trophy has won the tournament.
Retief, we've talked a little bit about the USGA and the R&A news today, focusing on the golf ball and the drivers. Where are we in terms of modern-day equipment and modern-day pro golf? Are we in a good spot? Are we in a bad spot? Or are we where we should be?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, you know. It's difficult to say to all these great manufacturers, listen, you got to make a golf ball that performs worse, or you got to make a driver that performs worse. You know, how are they going to sell that product? It's going to be a tricky one. You know, they've now took away the length of the driver. They stopped the anchoring on the putters. So what next? You know, for me, I think tinkering around with the clubs now, trying to make them perform worse, shorter, and golf ball the same thing. I think maybe we should look at the guys hitting it out there 340 yards. He's got a 60-yard shot left. Maybe we should make that 60-yard shot tougher. Let's say the maximum loft you're allowed on a wedge is 56 degrees. Once you take away that 60-degree wedge or the 64-degree wedge, it makes those shots so much tougher, and it's going to force the guys to probably lay back a little and have more fuller shots in. So, and it's going to make it tougher around the greens to get it up and down. That's the only way, really, I think you're going to have a chance of bringing some of the scoring down. But giving the guys a 60 or 64-degree wedge makes a lot of the shots a lot easier.
Retief, a fellow member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, Greg Norman, his Live Series announced 8 events today internationally, a potential rival to the PGA Tour. As a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, what is your reaction to this threat to the PGA Tour?
You know, it's a tough one. You know, European Tour, the South African Tour, Australia and the Far East, they're all trying to create more events for their respective PGA Tours to make it more lucrative and for the guys to have more tournaments to play in. And I'm sure that was Greg's whole idea, is to come along and create more tournaments for the guys to play in. But it seems to want to take away a little bit about the stardom of the PGA Tour. You know, I think if they maybe slowly worked their way in and not came with such an aggressive approach of just trying to take players away instantly, it might have been looked at a different light. Sure, there's probably going to be some guys that are going to go, you know what, I'm never going to win a major, or I'm never going to be in a Hall of Fame, or I'm never going to play in a Ryder Cup, I might as well go and play there and play for X amount every week, no cut, and make some good money instead of playing in the really tough conditions that you get on the PGA Tour trying to make the cut every week to make a living. So it's a fine line between saying it's a good thing or it's a bad thing, but for some guys, it's going to be another lease of life maybe and making some really good money. But I don't think the PGA Tour needs to be worried that all their stars are suddenly going to be running off and disappearing from the PGA Tour. These guys still want to win majors, still want to be put in the Hall of Fame, and definitely want to prove themselves to the rest of the world what great players they are and what a great tour the PGA Tour is.
The story will continue to follow. Hey, Retief, great visiting with you, talking Tampa. Congrats on winning the Hogue, by the way. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, World Golf Hall of Fame member Retief Goose. You know, several players coming from the Players' Champs have already WD'd from this week's event. They're tired. They're whipped. Long week. But what's the weirdest WDs of all time? That's next on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by Cobra LTDX Drivers, engineered for the longest total distance.
Players champ Cam Smith, never intending to play this week at Valspar, this morning announcing his break will extend past next week, saying in a statement, to spend some time with his family, will not be playing next week at the WGC Dell Technologies match play. We have some weird WDs. I understand that one.
Yeah, quarterfinalist, by the way, of the match play in 2018. We've seen some interesting WDs over the years. Victor Hovland, if you remember, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy stuff. This was Vic Hovland, right?
U.S. Open, sand in his eye, WD, won the next event, D.
Rory McIlroy, toothache, 2013 at the Honda. I was there.
Toothache.
Later apologize.
It's okay. It happens.
Does happen. To the best of them.
Big show. We'll do it again tomorrow.